Mark Stein's Last Call.
The Chi-Com virus is overloading the obituary pages, and I want to note a few of the passings before they get lost in the avalanche of deaths. Terence McNally was one of the most successful Broadway playwrights of the last 40 years. He wrote Frankie and Johnny in the Clair de Lune, a touching play about a waitress and a short order cook. If you saw it on screen with Al Pacino and Michelle Pfeiffer, I'm sorry you didn't see it on stage with F. Murray Abraham and Kathy Bates. Casting matters. McNally also wrote Corpus Christi, in which a gay Jesus gets sodomized by Judas Iscariot. You can imagine what I made of that. And he wrote musicals, including with Candran Ebb, The Kiss of the Spider Woman.
Sooner or later, you're certain to meet in the bedroom, the parlor, or even the street. There's no place on earth you're likely to miss her kiss.
Terence McNally, dead of COVID-19 at the age of 81. That title song from The Kiss of the Spider Woman is creepily apt for the age of contagion. Sooner or later, you're certain to meet in the bedroom, the parlor, or even the street. There's no place on earth you're likely to miss her kiss. No place on earth you're likely to miss the kiss of COVID-19.
Sooner or later, in sunlight or gloom, when the red candles flicker, she'll walk in the room, and the curtains will shake, and the fire will hiss. Here comes her kiss.
Also dead, at the age of 89, Lucia Bosè, the winner of Miss Italia 1947.
La riconoscete? È la signorina Lucia Bosè, Miss Italia 1947. Porta i suoi 16 anni sotto i fuochi fotoelettrici del teatro Incom, per la cresima della gloria, il provino.
1947 was a good year. Lucia Bosè was up against Gina Lollobrigida. And young Lucia beat Signorina Lollobrigida and took the Miss Italia title. She became a leading lady of Italian neorealist cinema in the 1950s. Here she is, not yet 20, in Antonioni's first feature film, Cronaca di un Amore.
Ecco, anche tu sei cambiata, ti sei messo a fare complimenti. Da quando ci conosciamo è la prima volta.
Sooner or later your love will arrive, and she touches your heart, you're alert and alive. But there's only one pin that can puncture such bliss, her kiss.
I'm no expert on Spanish nobility, but as I understand it, the title Grandee of Spain is the highest dignity in all of Europe. The king addresses you as cousin, and you are entitled to remain covered in His Majesty's presence. Dead of the Chi-Com virus at the age of 83, Carlos Falco y Fernandez de Cordoba was not only such a grandee, but also the 12th Marquess de Castelmoncayo and the 5th Marquess de Grignon, which lesser title he preferred to go by, and which is also the name of his family's wine, which is one of the best wines on the planet. And I would love to raise a glass to him. But alas, that small pleasure of a glass of Marquess de Grignon is lost to me for the duration. Here is the Marquess de Grignon descending his stately staircase of a morning and greeting his servants. They liked him.
Buenos días, Sonia. ¿Qué tal? ¿Qué tal, Susana?
Usted es Marqués de Griñón.
Sí.
Sooner or later you bathe in success and your minions salute. They say nothing but yes, but your power is empty. It fades like the mist once you've been kissed.
The State of the Nation with Zororo Makamba.
Happy New Year. We have just started a new decade. We're coming out of one of the most dramatic decades in our country's history. This decade saw a lot of big changes to the economy, big changes to our politics, from changes of currencies to changes of leaders.
Dead of COVID-19 at the age of 30, Zororo Makamba, Harare journalist and a rising star of Zimbabwean television. He covered the last sputters of the vile old crocodile, Robert Mugabe, and outlived that evil nonagenarian monster by a mere 6 months.
He falls down the stairs at the airport. Who can forget all the memes that trended all over the world? Then the man reads the wrong speech in Parliament.
You can run, you can scream, you can hide, but you cannot escape.
A couple of years ago, my daughter and I visited Longleat House, a great estate in Wiltshire and the ancestral home of the Marquesses of Bath, in connection with some research I was doing. And we had a word with the seventh Marquess, whose mother, Daphne Fielding, was an old friend of mine and a very funny lady. The Baths are not your typical Marquessate. As we neared Longleat, my daughter noticed that the road was lined with billboards of huge lions, the lions of Longleat. The house has beautiful grounds, landscaped in the 18th century by England's greatest gardener, Capability Brown, but it also has a safari park. It said that when they applied for planning permission from the county, the council assumed that by, quote, wild animals, the Baths meant wild deer, and were astounded when the lions started arriving. Surviving as a marquess in post-war Britain required a deal of wit and ingenuity. Awaiting his inheritance under his courtesy title, Viscount Weymouth was a painter and writer and musician whose artistic endeavours earned him less fame than his ponytail and eccentric hippie-ish garb, and the prodigious number of mistresses installed in estate cottages all over Longleat. He called them his wiflets.
But you've had 75 wiflets, as you call them.
Yes, most unproductively. I've already tried to persuade them to have huge amounts of children by me, but I haven't been very successful.
Why do you call them wiflets?
I felt that it would be running them down to call things like concubines, mistresses. I just preferred a pleasantly humorous term that one can all talk and all feel, yes, I'm a happy wiflet.
And has your wife chosen that? Your wife, you don't...
No, these are my values and what I've been trying to do, but...
But she has gone along. You've had an open marriage in that she knows about the wiflets, doesn't
she? Yes, she certainly knows about it, but I don't suppose she would say she approves of it. She puts up with it.
Unlike the wiflets living at Longleat, the actual wife, a Hungarian actress, preferred to spend 3 out of 4 weeks in Paris. Their children adjusted as best they could, although a threat by Lord Bath's son to evict the wiflets from Longleat led to the seventh Marquess boycotting his boy's wedding to Emma McQuiston, the daughter of a Nigerian oil billionaire. Emma is best known in Britain as a spirited competitor on Strictly Come Dancing, the British original of what Americans know as Dancing with the Stars. Oh, OK. What did Bruno make of Emma?
So that's 2 votes for Emma and Aliash. If Bruno now votes to save them, they are through to next week. Bruno, who do you want to stay in Strictly Come Dancing?
Well, I have to save the couple that's shown absolutely no mistakes, I have to say. Stronger, cleaner, on focus, Emma and Aliash.
Lord Bath was not unknown to TV audiences himself. He sang a song accompanied by his guitar one night on the telly, and the legendary Des O'Connor called him up and said, "Have you got any more like that?" The Marquis said, "Sure," and Des got him a recording contract. Every song on the album was dedicated to one of his then lovers, including one of the Bond girls from On Her Majesty's Secret Service. This song was for the long-suffering missus, Love Words.
I who have learned to know you like the swallow knows its nest, want to bestow you love words I owe you deep from my treasure chest. Flowers have scented honey, but the savours I like best are the taste of your night coming mingled with hearts drumming here on my naked chest.
And that was the eccentric English lord, Alexander Lord Weymouth, the Loins of Longley, from his 1974 Vanity Pressing Acid Folk album, I Play the Host. The guy had 70 wives, and he lived in a stately home that he painted all the walls himself with murals of his bizarre communal lifestyle.
Dead of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 87, the 7th Marquess of Bath. Emma, from Strictly Come Dancing, is now the first black marchioness in the history of the British peerage. If you go to the Spanish municipality of Cesena, about 20 miles south of Madrid, you will notice that it is not as other towns. It was the scene of an ill-advised assault by Republican forces against Franco's troops in what was the first use of tanks in the Spanish Civil War. But that's not its most obvious distinction. During the property boom of the 2000s, Cesena became the scene of one of the biggest of all property developments, nearly 14,000 housing units costing over 9 billion euros, which is a lot of money. Unfortunately, the developer, Francisco Hernando Contreras, failed to make provision for gas and water and other utilities because he was too busy bribing the mayor and other local officials to look the other way. As a result, the homes were essentially uninhabitable. Then came the 2008 global downturn and the popping of the housing bubble. Only 3,000 units were sold, and under 1,000 have anybody in them, surrounded by a ghost town of 13,000 empty homes.
Entramos en el barrio del Quiñón de Cesena, considerado durante años paradigma de la burbuja inmobiliaria de España. En 2003, el constructor Francisco Hernando, conocido como El Pocero, proyectó construir en estos terrenos más de 13.000 viviendas. Al final, la burbuja se pinchó y solo se terminaron 5.096. Muchas de ellas quedaron deshabitadas. Se llamó la ciudad fantasma. ¿Sigue siéndolo?
Francisco Hernando Contreras was long gone, hastily relocating himself and his business to Equatorial Guinea. And then he moved back. Dead of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 74, Francisco Hernando Contreras.
As I gazed at the timbered floor, I felt distress at the sight I saw. Watching the fingers of fungus grow, like seaweed clutching a stricken shore. And conscious now of the suction slow from hungry fathoms which lurked below.
What can't COVID-19 do?
Hey, 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 happy campers! Look who's up to his old tricks.
That's right. Yogi Bear.
It's open season for fun in Jellystone Park.
Yeah. What can't COVID-19 do? It's managed to kill off Yogi Bear's girlfriend, Cindy Bear, or at least the actress who voiced Cindy for 3 decades.
Hello, Yogi.
How about that? Talking picnic basket.
I said, hello, Yogi.
Cindy, what's on your mind? As if it isn't oblivious.
Oh, it's spring again.
So I've been hearing.
It's when boy meets girl, something clicks, and they start sharing everything.
Sharing everything? I didn't hear any click.
It's a time when you whisper sweet nothings in my ear.
That I can do.
Ooh, Yogi.
Nothing. Nothing, nothing, nothing. Nothing. And because you're such a sweet kid, here's another nothing for nothing.
Oh, Yogi.
Julie Bennett started out as a stage and screen actress in the Burns and Allen show, Superman and Dragnet. But she found her greatest success as the voice of enduring animated characters. In the 90s, she traded Yogi Bear for the amazing Spider-Man as Peter Parker's paw put upon Aunt May.
Peter!
Aunt May!
What's going on?
Stay back!
Peter!
Aunt May! No!
Oh, yes. Dead of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 88, Julie Bennett.
While the captain stood in his martyr's pose, forever firing at fictitious foes.
In recent years, those countries that have legalized abortion have not merely legalized it, but moved on to criminalizing opposition to it. Xavier Dor was an embryologist at the Hôpital Pitié-Salpêtrière in Paris and a researcher in cardiac embryology at INSERM, the Institut National de la Santé et de la Recherche Médicale. But precisely because of his researches, he was opposed to abortion. And so, thanks to a disgraceful French law of 1993, found himself hauled up before the courts every other year. 6 years ago, he gave a pair of knitted slippers and a medallion showing the Virgin Mary to a woman considering aborting her baby. And so he found himself charged and convicted of exerting, quote, moral and psychological pressure upon her.
La deuxième, donc, j'ai été condamné pour avoir donné essentiellement des chaussons, des petits chaussons à une dame en sortant d'une médaille miraculeuse, du planning familial. Elle a dit c'est en tant que catholique qu'elle a été choquée.
The Court of Appeal eventually overturned Xavier Dor's conviction for this curious crime, but nevertheless fined him 10,000 euros for obstructing an abortion, warned by multiple judges to cease his opposition to a woman's right to choose. Monsieur Dor responded that, même sur mon lit de mort, je condamnerai, even on my deathbed, I will continue. Dead of the Chinese coronavirus at the age of 91, Xavier Dor.
Then all at once my dark retreat swelled like a melon in the summer's heat, while I floated light with nimble hands, grasping a tiller in the driver's seat. And the roof was hull to a ship that began to cleave the breeze in a wonderland.
Psychedelic lyrics by the late Marquess of Bath. Best of luck to the wifelets, now that his son is running those estate cottages. While I was sitting in for Rush the other day, I was thinking, this thing's kind of like Jaws. Some of us are like the mayor of that town and thinking, shut down the beach, are you crazy? And others are like the Richard Dreyfuss character and saying, these teeth marks are way bigger than a regular shark. Everyone's going to die. And the rest of us are trying to do a Chief Brody and steer a middle course. But in the end, a lot of it's to do with your allotted role in the narrative. For instance, if you happen to be the mother of a young boy eaten by the shark.
Chief Brody?
Yes?
I just found out that a girl got killed here last week. And you knew it. You knew there was a shark out there. You knew it was dangerous. But you let people go swimming anyway. You knew all those things. But still, my boy is dead now. And there's nothing you can do about it. My boy is dead. I wanted you to know that.
Lee Fierro as the grieving Mrs. Kintner in Jaws in the famous face-slapping scene with Roy Scheider. Steven Spielberg did not want a star-studded cast for Jaws, despite pressure from the studio, because he thought, for example, that Charlton Heston, who wanted to play the police chief, would give it a glamour and grandeur that would undermine the sense of a normal small town under attack. He filmed it in Martha's Vineyard, and many in the cast were locals, like Lee Fierro, who was the artistic director of the Island Theatre Workshop. And after she'd hit the big screen in Jaws, she went right back to being artistic director of the Island Theatre Workshop, where she stayed for another 42 years. Beloved by hundreds and hundreds of actors who passed through that small Martha's Vineyard Island Theatre. Dead of the coronavirus at the age of 91, Lee Fierro, as with her kid in the movie, they waited too long to close the beach. Mihailo Knežević was born near Valjevo in western Serbia and was tonsured as an Eastern Orthodox monk, scalped and renamed after a great Serbian king of the early 14th century, Stefan Milutin. Thereafter, Milutin Knežević led a most peripatetic life as graduate of the Theological Faculty of St. Sava in Libertyville, Illinois, secretary of the Serbian Orthodox Diocese of Canada, a parish priest in Niagara Falls, bishop of Australia and New Zealand, and finally home to Valjevo as bishop in 2006. Since we are pretty much unchurched this Easter, here is Bishop Knežević 6 Easters ago, 2014, preaching against the heresy of the Roman Pope. Quote, "We are not going to forget Rome's heresy, Rome's Pope, who proclaimed the greatest heresy in this world when he said that he is the vicar of God's Son. How so, O you Pope of Rome?"
Pored mnogi heresi, nećemo zaboraviti rimsku jeres, rimskog papu, koji je najveću jeres proglasio na ovome svetu, kada je rekao da je on namjesnik Sina Božijeg.
Bishop Milutin Knezovich. Quote, the Pope gave birth to Martin Luther, and Martin Luther gave birth to thousands of sects that are sweeping through the world, who often drink human blood, who kill children to drink human blood. Terrible sects that are the fruits of Rome's Pope. I'm no theologian, but it sounds to me like there are bigger differences between Rome and the Serbian Orthodox Church than between Rome and my dear old Anglican Communion. Drinking human blood is not a good idea right now, but then members of the Serbian Orthodox Church receive communion through a single spoon dipped and re-dipped in wine for all congregants, a practice that continued until a fortnight ago. Bishop Knezovic shared the same spoon as everybody else. Then he fell sick, was taken to hospital in Belgrade, and became the first Eastern Orthodox bishop to fall victim to the Chinese coronavirus. Dead of COVID-19 at the age of 71, Milutin Knezovic. Is there anybody who watches La Dolce Vita for the shoes? I mean, Anita Ekberg, sure. Marcello Mastroianni. Anu Kameh, Nino Rota's music. But who pays attention to the shoes?
Buonasera, Maddalena. Come sta? Sola? Vuole ballare?
No.
Beviamo una vodka?
No, mi va tutto storto stasera. Vado via.
L'accompagno.
Well, Federico Fellini did, and he loved the footwear of a young man called Sergio Rossi, the son of a shoemaker from San Mauro Pascoli. Sergio was 25, and Fellini decided that Anita Ekberg would wear his shoes in La Dolce Vita. And people did notice, and Sergio Rossi became a world-famous shoe designer and a global luxury brand. When the coronavirus hit Northern Italy, Signor Rossi gave 100,000 euros to the Luigi Sacco Hospital in Milan. Not all his wealth could save him. He died about 10 miles from where he was born, in the part of Italy he loved best, but also, alas, the most afflicted by the Wuhan scourge. Dead of the China coronavirus at the age of 84, Sergio Rossi. I've mentioned before, I think in Mark Steyn's Passing Parade, that I used to date a nurse who worked at the Royal London Hospital, and at the end of her shift, we'd go for a drink across the road at the local pub, the Blind Beggar, an East End landmark famed for one night in the 60s when Ronnie Cray, one half of the notorious Cray twins, strolled in and pulled a gun on his gangland rival George Cornell.
Well, well, well. Mr. Cray. You haven't got the bottle.
George bet wrong when it came to Ronnie's bottle. Ronnie shot him between the eyes. The jukebox was playing the Walker Brothers' number one hit, The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore, and is said to have got stuck on the title phrase over and over. The sun ain't gonna shine for him anymore, said Ronnie.
We eventually traced most of the witnesses there, but none of them would give evidence that they'd seen Ronnie Cray. They were immovable because there was always this wall of silence. First of all, this natural wall of silence that people in the East End don't talk to the coppers. And the second thing was that this wall of fear. It was almost common knowledge that Ronnie Cray had shot George Cornell in The Blind Beggars. As a matter of fact, when later I started to investigate it, people in the East End said to me that the Crays did everything but take the front page of the Times to advertise the fact.
That's Detective Chief Superintendent Leonard Reed of the Metropolitan Police, better known as Nipper Reed of the Yard, back in the days before the Met became woke wankers. In the East End in those days, nobody grasped to the Peelers. So no matter how insanely pointless and arbitrary their violence got, the Cray twins, Reggie was the straight one, Ronnie was the gay one, both of them were psychopathic, the Cray twins were untouchable. Even when you found a witness, a week or two later, they had a revelation from the Lord.
His story to me was that he had been walking around London and suddenly he'd had a revelation from God that he shouldn't tell this story, that it was a story that was false, and that suddenly when he came to his senses, he realised that he was in Valence Road, and he walked into 178, which was the home of the Crays then, and there demanded to see a priest, and so one was brought to him, and then he confessed that the story that he'd given before was false, and that he now wanted to renege on that and give the true evidence.
The most methodical of coppers, Nipper Reed patiently worked away and eventually turned the barmaid at the Blind Beggar that night.
Given a new identity, the barmaid was moved out of London to a secret address in Essex.
Eventually, she was persuaded by the nature of the support that she had that she could tell the truth. And in fact, later on in court, she very dramatically pointed to Ronnie Cray and said, "That is the man."
It was the longest and most expensive trial in English courtroom history. The twins were sent down for 30 years, which, given their dominance over East End life, was so extraordinary that Reggie and Ronnie's family, listening to the verdict on the radio back home, assumed it must have been a mistake.
Aunt Violet, myself and Mum was in the kitchen and we was listening to the wireless. And when it came on that they'd got 30 years, you know, we was dumbstruck, really. We couldn't believe it, like, and Aunt Violet looked at Mother and she said, "Oh, I think they've made a mistake."
Nipper Reed outlived Reggie and Ronnie Cray and the other East End criminals he put behind bars, and in later life was inclined to see them as a phenomenon of the age.
I feel they were a part of the 60s, like the minicar and Twiggy and other things. You know, they were a part of it.
As was Leonard Nipper Reed, immortalised by Monty Python as Harry Snapper Organs, the man who hunted down the Piranha Brothers.
It was in February, though, that Dinsdale made a big mistake. In a fit of pique, he napalmed Cheltenham. Even the police began to sit up and take notice.
The Piranhas realised they'd gone too far and that the hunt was on. They went into hiding. I decided on a subtle approach, viz. Some form of disguise, as the old helmet and boots were a bit of a giveaway.
Dead of the coronavirus 1 week after his 95th birthday, Detective Chief Superintendent Nipper Reed. I wonder what would happen if a Wuhan bat were to bite a shark, a sequel I hope never to see. One more, to return to where we came in. Singer John Prine, 73 years old. He is one of the few songwriters to have written about his own death and one of the even fewer to make musical provision for the disposal of his remains.
It's an old song. That your grandpa might have taught you. It's a suggestion of what to do with your body parts after you leave here. Just a suggestion. My doctor told me, don't you go leaving any of your parts to anybody, so you're not doing anybody any good.
woke up this morning, put on my slippers, I walked in the kitchen and died. And oh, what a feeling when my soul went through the ceiling and on up into heaven I did ride. When I got there, they did say, John, it happened this way. You slipped upon the floor and hit your head. And all the angels say, just before you passed away, that these were the very last words that you said. Please don't bury me down in the cold, cold ground. No, I'd rather have them cut me up and pass me all around. Throw my brain in a hurricane, the blind could have my eyes, and the deaf could take, oh, to my ears if they don't mind the size. Get my stomach to Milwaukee if they run out of beer. Put my socks in a cedar box just to get them out of here. A Venus de Milo can have my arms. Look out, I got your nose. Sell my heart to the junk man and give my love to Rose. But please don't bury me down in the cold, cold ground. I'd rather have them cut me up and pass me all around. Throw my brain in a hurricane, the blind could have my eyes, and the deaf could take both of my ears if they don't mind the size. Oh, man. I give my feet to the footloose, careless, fancy free, and give my knees to the needy. Don't pull that stuff on me. Hand me down my walking cane. It's a sin to tell a lie. Send my mouth way down south and kiss my ass goodbye. But please don't bury me down in the cold, cold ground. I'd rather have them cut me up and pass me all around. Throw my brain in a hurricane. The blind could have my eyes and the deaf could take both of my ears if they don't mind the size. That's right.
A midweek Song of the Week extra from me to you, courtesy of John Prine. Please don't bury me down in that cold, cold ground. I'd rather have them cut me up and pass me all around. But they cannot give your eyes to the blind and your arms to the Venus de Milo, not when you die of COVID-19. Stay safe, stay free.
Join us next time for another edition of The Mark Stein Show. The Mark Stein Show is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.